Hello and welcome to Securing Sexuality, the podcast where we discuss the intersection of intimacy
and information security. I'm Wolf Gorlick.
He's a hacker, and I'm Stephanie Gorlick.
She's a sex therapist, and together we're going to discuss what safe sex looks like in the digital age.
So, you know, I have been teaching a couple classes this semester, right?
Yep. Oh, do I ever.
And one of the things that I teach about is the paraphilias, right? The DSM paraphilias. So we have exhibitionism, we have sadism and masochism, and we have voyeurism, and we have all the others that are in there. And often I kind of gloss over exhibitionism and voyeurism because I say, you know, these are my yellow flag paraphilias because there are lots of ways in which people can engage in this sort of play safely and consensually. And so historically, when I have been teaching, I have not been putting a lot of time or energy into talking about voyeurism. But a friend of ours in Milwaukee sent me a couple of news articles this week that freaked me out and made me rethink what voyeurism looks like today. And so I wanted to tell you about it.
Well, I mean, I'm always down for hearing about paraphilias. You make them sound so exciting.
I mean, to be fair, this is less sexy, but it still falls under the umbrella of voyeurism.
I still had fun that one time when you're first putting together a paraphilias class, where all day I came up with different words that started with para that was my paraphilias.
Oh, you drove me crazy. So frustrating.
Send you something. I'm like, it's a paragraph because I have a paragraph paraphilia. First couple times you laughed, but by the end of the day, I think you're ready to stab me.
Look, usually you're not a dad joke person, but you really drove the dad joke into the ground.
Oh, I hit bedrock. There was bedrock hit there. So yeah, I mean, voyeurism is a thing. And then as a more broad concept and a more broad concern, you know, I always wonder, like, is anyone spying on us, right? Like, we always know, like, we're out in public, there's certain things that can happen, but, you know, there's cameras everywhere and everyone's phones now, and that sort of, in my mind, opens up a different level of these things, right? How many times have we seen on social media something that someone thought was a private conversation get recorded and shared?
Yeah, and that was what piqued my interest, because when I have talked about voyeurism historically, I have talked about, you know, the sexy kind. And what came to my attention this week was way less sexy and way more concerning to me. Apparently, there are several different apps now that are being used to effectively, like, spy on neighborhoods and spy on people. And individual everyday people can upload information about their neighbors and other people can access that. And we're not talking like Nextdoor or the neighborhood apps that people opt into and join and share. This is like apps that have been specifically developed to figure out which people in your neighborhood share your religion or don't. This is apps that will let people create lists of, like, who was at, I don't know, the last police brutality protest. And it becomes this, like, open source, completely unregulated way of spying on each other. And I gotta say, I've been hanging out with you and the hacker people long enough that I've become really jaded about the idea of businesses spying on me, right? Like, I totally get that anything I post on Facebook, Zuckerberg is selling to anybody that will give him a quarter for it. But I had not considered the idea that there were platforms out there that would let our neighbors spy on us. And that, to me, is much more disturbing.
And I think what's interesting about this is it is beyond the everyday apps, to your point, right? Like, you know, there is that quote by William Gibson that I just love and I use way too often, which is, the street will find its own use for things. Now, whenever there's a technology out, people will figure out what they want to do with it. And you're right, like Nextdoor was all in the news a few years ago. Why? Because people were using that app, right? The street finds its own use for thing, even if they're Nextdoor, to spy on each other, to report about things and whatnot. And I remember the Surveillance Technology Oversight Project, STOP, at the time had put out a thing highlighting Nextdoor and saying, hey, look, we got to make sure that people aren't doing racial profiling or gender profiling. This could turn into vigilantism. And so that has been a problem for a little bit. But it sounds like what you're describing is like a purpose-built app for this.
Yeah, there are a couple. And one is specifically looking at religion. It's an app that's been developed so that church-going people can figure out who in their neighborhood are not church-going people, and that they can specifically approach them for like missionarying and evangelistic outwork, which, if you're a part of those communities, probably sounds lovely. But if you are not a part of those communities, it would be very uncomfortable for me to be on a list of people that are or are not religiously affiliated. Like, bad things have happened when we've categorized people based on their faith historically. And yet, churches all around the country are using this app to share lists of non-believers with their congregants. And that's not Meta, that's not Google. Like, that's a very sort of grassroots intrusion that caught me off guard when I first heard about it.
Well, why go door to door marking every door that, you know, is someone not like you when you can just drop a pin?
And I mean, this is a perfect example of something that probably was really benign or even benevolent in intention that could go sideways very quickly. And that's not the only instance out there. There was another app that a friend of ours brought to my attention called Citizen that is being used in much the same way right now to, you know, create localized sex offender registries, for example, to be able to communicate with other app users, groups of people, or to identify a neighbor as being a part of a specific community or demographic, and then other people can see that. And that, to me, is horrifying, because sure, you know, you have explained to me and to others in the past that, you know, the but what about the children sort of rationale is used to justify a lot of privacy incursions. But this feels even more intrusive to me, because we're not even talking about like the state sex offender registry. We're talking about any person downloading this app and slapping a label on any other person that then other users are able to see and follow and track. And that is incredibly disturbing to me.
It is disturbing. But before we get on to Citizen, let's go back to this other app you're talking about. What app is that?
So that one is called Bless Every Home, I believe. And it is being rolled out by church groups ahead of the Easter holidays. And again, well-intentioned, perhaps poorly executed.
What concerns me about that application is, who's behind it? Who makes that application?
I genuinely don't know. Does anybody? I mean, if anybody's going to know, you would know.
I ask this because, you know, like from our Covenant Eyes episode, some of the things I look at, like who's the company? How much money do they have? How many employees do they have? I can estimate based on that how much security they have and how much they've invested in these things. These are the kinds of conversations that I have when I'm trying to do like an assessment of a security program. And what's weird about this particular app is it's just run by a nonprofit, and there's nothing wrong with nonprofits, but there's not a lot of like information on the nonprofit in terms of who's behind it or what have you. There is things like how much money they bring in. They bring in like $500,000 in revenue. How are they spending that money? We don't know. Their expenses are higher than the revenue. Obviously, they're a nonprofit. I guess that makes sense. But we really don't have a sense of who those folks are and how secure they are, which always concerns me.
Yeah, that actually surprises me, because, you know, when I hear it's a nonprofit, my first thought as a social worker is, oh, good. That means that there must be more information available because, you know, our nonprofits have to do like their 990s every year. Like they are required to be a little bit more transparent than your average corporation. So when you first started talking, I was optimistic and now I'm not. I was hoping that if I brought you these apps, you would reassure me. And I don't feel like that's the path we're going down.
Well, probably not. The top donor is also the person who runs the nonprofit. So it is that normal?
I mean, it can be, but that's unusual. That would tell me, you know, as somebody that comes out of the nonprofit world, that this is probably a very small nonprofit. It's probably very new, very grassroots. It's not unusual for a new nonprofit to be kind of self-funded for the first couple of years because many grant funders want to see a history, a track record of work and good fiscal management before they start awarding grants or making donations.
What if I was to tell you it was founded in 1997?
Oh, that changes everything because anything funded in 1997 that is, to my mind, a nonprofit on the up and up should have a lengthy paper trail with their 990s and GuideStar and Charity Navigator. And they should not at that point be self-funded. That's actually raises all kinds of red flags for me.
What if I was to tell you it was based out of Orlando, Florida?
I mean, Florida is creepy for a number of reasons, but I don't know if the Orlando piece necessarily raises any concerns other than the fact that we know that Florida is having a particularly socially conservative movement right now.
Okay. So this nonprofit is built Bless Every Home for tracking non-religious people or non-evangelical people, I suppose. And then I'm sure they're gathering all that data together. We don't necessarily know where that data is being stored or anything, because I don't have any insight to this application. Again, I'm not pen testing it for this episode. But, you know, the very fact that data is out there and made to everyone is a concern. The very fact that the data could potentially be broken into is a concern.
I mean, between now and when this episode airs, I'm going to go onto my favorite resource, Charity Navigator and GuideStar, and see what I can find. But, you know, when this first came to my attention, I expected you to tell me that it was one of the myriad poorly thought out tech startup venture capital bro ideas that we're seeing everywhere. I was not expecting you to tell me that this was almost 30 years old.
Well, the nonprofit is. The application is relatively new.
Well, of course.
So, but I mean, the application's only been out for about a year. But, I mean, these are the things that always concern me, right? Because, you know, we've looked at this in the past. We've looked at, you know, if you take a look at what the national database that tracks hate crimes, one of the things they always say is, you know, those who target others because of their religion or nationality usually have higher rates of previous criminal activity. They usually belong to hate groups. Now, I'm not saying a hate group is going to be on Bless Everyone, Everywhere.
Bless Every Home.
Bless Every Home. But I'm also not entirely sure how they're making sure that only the right people have access to the data. And right people is in air quotes for those listening.
Yeah, that's really the concerning thing for me is I, you know, with a lack of other evidence, I would never assume negative intent from a lot of the people that develop these kinds of apps. I mean, often this happens because they think it's a great idea and they have this very benevolent vision for how it's going to be used. What always concerns me is, well, once it's on the App Store, anybody can use it. Like, what systems are in place, to your point, to make sure that this information, this data, these lists that are being created for altruistic, if perhaps misguided purposes, aren't being misused by people that are not nearly as altruistic.
Which I think gets us back to Citizen. So I didn't mean to cut you off there, but before we jumped from the app that's directly made to track people not like me, and you go to Citizen, which is like next door neighbor on steroids. You can build lists and you can share things. What are the concerns about Citizen that you're seeing?
Well, I mean, for one, you can build lists and you can share things, and that can be great if you're trying to track who's the best dog walker in your neighborhood. But we are seeing it being used for other reasons already. You know, we are living in a very socially active, very politically motivated time. And people on both sides of the political spectrum have access to this tool to create what effectively becomes an enemies list. One of the concerns that our friend who first brought this app to my attention was sharing was that in the same way that Bless Every Home is being used to create a list of, you know, people in your neighborhood that you can visit and share the gospel with, Citizen is being used to create lists of religious minorities and other minority groups that you don't want in your neighborhood. You know, one of these screen caps that was shared with me was somebody literally posting, you know, a Jew was spotted at this location. And, you know, as anybody who practices a minority faith will attest, nobody likes to be known as the person at that location. That doesn't feel safe, and there's really no good reason for that to be happening. So expand that outward, right? That can become the trans person at that location, the undocumented person at that location, the woman walking alone at that location. It becomes a way to broadcast the identity, the perhaps risk factors, and the location of people without them knowing that it's happening in real time. And that is terrifying to me in a way that the other forms of data collection and data sharing we've talked about have never landed.
Yeah, and the feed, what you're talking about was in the feed, right? So people can take a video or take a photo, post it to the Citizen's feed in your area to let you know, like, what's going on. And in context, the one before it was, oh, there's police activity. And then the one below it was like, oh, you know, here's a video that Citizen took of a police arrest. And then, yeah, Jew spotted over here. I was like, ah.
And that exactly is the fear, right? Like, it was brought to my attention because I'm a part of the community that was showing up in that particular screen cap, but it can be used to target and share information about all kinds of vulnerable people. And I was not able in my digging to find any sort of mechanism that the developers had put in place to limit the kind of information that was sharing. It's not like they're using new, you know, AI moderation to make sure that if certain keywords like Jew or trans comes up, they're not being posted. There's not that level of moderation. So this has become, to come back to, you know, my earlier comments about voyeurism, this to me feels like a brand new form of peeping Tom, right? Like, back in the day, the biggest concern that I'm going to speak from the eye, so a woman might have would be her creepy neighbor, like, watching through the window as she undressed at night. But now our creepy neighbors can broadcast to everybody else that I'm undressing and that if they want to see it, this is where I am right now. And that is horrifying.
Well, not only can they broadcast it, they can also take videos and clips and upload it and everything else. This does get back to certainly a strong need for moderation. However, one of the problems with a lot of this is there isn't, if we in the U.S., I mind you, we have listeners in Europe, and, you know, congratulations on your privacy policies. We're very excited for you. Please bring them over here. But in the U.S., you know, if we talk regularly about how terrible the lack of privacy is at the corporate level, at the individual level, there's even less protection. So I don't know that there's like a lot you can do from a legal perspective right now other than to say, hey, that's, you know, please don't post that. Please remove it. It's not like there's strong policies in place.
Are there things that, and I can't believe I'm going to say this, The big corporations that I usually think of as the ones exploiting my information can do to protect us in this case. Like, I know that not every app is automatically approved to be put on the App Store. So are there ways that perhaps Apple could say these apps are intrusive, we're not hosting them? Like, what mechanisms do exist if American law specifically does not protect people?
First off, again, I think the right answer is stop in the EFF. The right answer is using, you know, the nonprofit organizations who are advocating for safer technology and for freer technology. I'm not sure I want to use like censorship to combat censorship or gatekeepers to combat gatekeepers. That gets very, very tricky very quickly. Yes. The app stores and other folks have the ability to delist and remove applications. Certain internet providers, if you're depending on how you are set up for hosting, have the ability to remove access to those sites. But again, whenever we have something like a blotter, though, right, where it's a free text form that anyone can put anything in, we're going to have risk. That's why we've, you know, have certain laws protecting app companies from what people put into those fields. So whenever you got a free-form text, someone is going to be using or abusing them. I think part of it is going to be the fight fought by EFF and STOP. I think part of it, too, is going to be what we need to do for ensuring that the users on these systems are educated not to target people. Now, maybe that's hard to do, but back to that database, if you look at like attacks on sexual orientation, attacks on gender, attacks on gender identity, when you look at those stats in the hate crimes database, what does it find? It finds it as younger people, it's unemployed people, it's unmarried people. This is oftentimes their first foray into a hate crime, right? They oftentimes do this under the influence of drugs and alcohol. So, I mean, in addition to can we look at big companies, I would say we need to also look and work with our nonprofits who are advocating on these. And part of that solution has to be reaching out to these groups who are very prone to looking at these, right? Getting home, taking some drugs, you know, drinking some alcohol, talking to their friends about how terrible it is that these people are out there and holding them down, opening up an app like this and scrolling to the top and saying, so-and-so's person was spotted over here, and then going after them. We need to do pressure at all of those levels.
I'm not going to ask the question of how can somebody know if they've been added to one of these apps? Because I don't know, especially with Citizen, because it's all happening in real time, that you can know. I don't know if I'm standing in a coffee shop that the person behind me has posted that. But there are other ones like that Bless Every Home that's more less fluid, right? It's not a live stream. It's a list that's generated. How can somebody that finds out that they're on a list like this or on an app like that go about trying to get their names off? Is there a mechanism for that? I know in Europe, there's the right to be forgotten. I don't know if that would even impact Bless Every Home, for example. But are there steps that an individual could take if they find out, let's say my neighbor shows up at my house with an Easter basket for me and they say, oh, we had your name on Bless Every Home. We thought we'd stop by and introduce ourselves. What are my options?
Take the candy and close the door very quickly.
I was always told not to take candy from strangers, baby.
Yeah, they told us that growing up. But I got to tell you, I ignored a lot of stuff they told us growing up, and it always leads to a much better story.
Okay, so what I'm hearing is my options are limited.
Well, yes. I mean, so the right to be forgotten and those sort of things would also apply to people in California or people with, you know, data privacy laws in the U.S., which currently is pretty much California. So there's not a lot out there. It would be interesting if we see a citizens group form to watch citizens. when Nextdoor was going sideways, there was some folks who organized grassroots neighborhood watch programs that watched Nextdoor to make sure that people weren't using them for, you know, racial profiling and whatnot. So there may be some interesting grassroots things that you could do at that level. But again, how are you going to force a nonprofit to remove you from their list off an app that doesn't seem to have any sort of data governance policies on it?
So it sounds like this is one of those episodes we do where we don't necessarily have a good answer to the, well, how do I prevent or stop that from happening, so much as it is we're just letting our listeners know that this is a thing that's out there that they need to have on their radar.
I think so. And again, you know, if you are in an area that's using Citizen, if you are in an area that's using Nextdoor, any of these apps, and you see someone doing something inappropriate with it, you know, we as a community are equally powerful in terms of getting content taken down, reporting it, taking action, as people are who are putting it up. So I do think that there is some things we can do there. I would love, you know, as we had this conversation, I'd love to reach out to the people at Stop and see if they'll come out, and we could do a follow-up and deep dive on some of their recommendations.
Right up Albert's alley. Albert Foxconn, we miss you.
Yeah, absolutely. Maybe we have Albert back on, or we have someone, you know, from his team. I know that they have absolutely done stuff with Nextdoor, and there's, you know, a lot of work being done on the advocacy side that we can talk about. But when it comes to Bless Every Home, I don't see, like, where you get removed from this, which is not good. They do have a privacy policy, but it doesn't necessarily say, hey, how do I get off your list?
I am going to do an experiment, and I'm going to reach out to them and ask.
If it makes you feel any better, their privacy policy does say that your password is not accessible to anybody.
Oh, so my religious affiliation, my home address, my neighborhood, my everything else is, but as long as I have a password there, I'm golden.
Right, exactly.
Huh. It's almost as if their priorities are not aligned with best practices or decent ethics.
I wouldn't say decent ethics, because ethics is, you know, as we've learned, ethical conversations get thorny quick. I can't point to an ethical guide that says that this is unethical or not. I just simply say that this is unadvised.
Somebody's been eavesdropping on my continuing education training.
This is the question I have for you, because you're the one who brought me this topic. So the question I have for you is, as a therapist, what is the impact, right? Because as a technologist, I'm like, oh yeah, someone else has your data. As a therapist, what is the impact to someone who is being monitored by these tools? That's just it. How does it impact them?
There is this concept, this term that activists and mental health professionals talk about quite a bit called minority stress. And what it means is that when somebody is a member of a minority group within a larger system, and that can mean anything, that can mean people of color in America, that could mean, I don't know, Buddhists in Saudi Arabia, that could mean a white man in mainland China, anything that makes you different from the wider community that you're in carries with it a certain degree of minority stress, meaning people are constantly aware of the fact that they are different, and they experience small differentiators constantly on an ongoing basis. And that has been shown to be linked to higher stress levels overall, to negative health outcomes, to negative mental health outcomes. In America, we talk about minority stress a lot in the context of LGBTQIA people and people of color and people of minority religious traditions. But really, you know, who's a minority depends on where they're living and when. And this is a great example of the way that minority stress can wear somebody down. It can take a huge psychological and emotional toll to know that somebody out there is making an app to track you and your home address and to share it with others just because you don't belong to the same church that they do, or just because you don't support the same political cause that they do, or any number of things. And this is, you know, we're living in an age where people are pushing back on the idea of political correctness and the idea of wokeness, and minority stress can sound like kind of a buzzword in that respect. But it is very real. The stress of everyday life living as a minority person in a majority anything culture is ongoing and pervasive, and it takes a toll emotionally, relationally, and physically. That is evidence-based, lots of peer-reviewed literature on that. And these apps are another example of how minority stress manifests, how marginalized people are further shoved into the margins and further isolated and further othered and further made to feel unwelcome and unsafe. And a lot of the people that are using these apps might not realize that or make that connection, because again, I'm sure that the developers have these really wonderful, lovely, aspirational, benevolent goals in mind when they come up with the idea. And the majority of users are aligned with those goals when they use it. But the fact that they have good intentions does not change the impact that being on a list like this, I'm going to say bless every home, that being on a list like that has for their Sikh neighbors, their Jewish neighbors, their Muslim neighbors, their pagan neighbors. Regardless of what the intentions are, the consequence is othering and marginalization and fear and stress, and that is never okay. And especially when we have things like Citizen, where it is being overtly used to target people for unkind and unsafe reasons, that fear is even worse. And I think that the creators of these apps, the developers, the moderators, the people that are coding them, the people that are keeping them up and running, do have a moral and ethical obligation to think about how these technologies can be used, what their intended purpose is, and what the outcomes of those purposes are for the people that end up being targeted on these lists. I know you had said that, you know, we're not going to get into ethical or unethical, we'll say advisable or not. But we have done previous episodes with tech ethicists, and I know that tech ethics is a thing. And I think this is a prime example of how app developers, app maintainers, and app users need to be thinking about the ethics of what they're building and the message that it sends to the people that these apps focus on and target.
A really good call to action, if not for all of us who are just living our day-to-day lives, but for those of us who are building and maintaining applications. Well, thank you, Love, for bringing this scary story of the week. Usually I get to be the scary one, so it's nice to have it reversed a little bit. And thank you all for tuning into Securing Sexuality, your source of the information you need to protect yourself and your relationships.
Securing Sexuality is brought to you by the Bound Together Foundation, a 501c3 nonprofit. From the bedroom to the cloud, we're here to help you navigate safe sex in a digital age.
Be sure to check out our website, securingsexuality.com, for links to more information about the topics we've discussed here today, as well as our upcoming live events.
And join us again for more fascinating conversations about the intersection of sexuality and technology. Have a great week.